Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Puck Guys Podcast, playoff round two edition.
Ooh.
We have made it.
We did.
Not as a fan base.
Nope.
But as a hockey fan, we made it.
Yes.
I'm referring, as always, to the Ducks and how sadly they were punished for nothing in games, which we'll get to in a minute. But shout out to thegruelingtruth.net. That's the website that sponsors us, puts our shows up, puts our amateur writings up. As we'll be sending them again tomorrow.
Yes.
Or tonight, late tonight, depending. Yeah. Yep. But our playoff previews will be out a little late, but you can always go in and read in depth as to why we picked what we picked. We appreciate that. And Mike at The Grueling Truth for giving us the opportunity to put up all of our content.
For sure.
This show, we got a round one wrap, and then GM gets... I like how they contract not renewed. That's essentially being fired without being fired, as what happened with Trent Yanning in Anaheim. As an assistant coach.
Should I be here at work on Monday?
Nah,
you're good.
Nah,
you're good,
you know,
man.
You know what? You take a permanent vacation.
And then we got the Flames get a new coach, round two preview, and some Ducks news. So this shouldn't, as we always say, be a long one, but it always is for
you
us.
You always say that.
Let's hop into the round one review. Let's start with our Ducks getting smoked by the Sharks in four games.
I saw that one coming.
Brutal.
Yeah.
The Ducks... as I just said, got defeated by the Sharks in four quick games, in embarrassing fashion through the first three, really, especially game three.
Yeah.
An 8-1 blowout. Gibson getting pulled, Miller coming in and getting blown up too. Just real quick, my thoughts on this series was no scoring.
Yeah.
Zero scoring help for the Ducks. Two even strength goals the entire series is not going to win you a series.
Nope.
Didn't show up, and that's it. That's all she wrote.
Yeah, the bigger underlying thing there is the speed aspect of it. We've been talking about it for, you know, a few seasons now. The NHL has moved to more of a speed-type setup, so you have to have speed and skill. It's not necessarily the size, although if you can do all three, you're a gem. You stick around. But it was very, very evident with out Cam Fowler there on the back end. The Ducks really couldn't do much as far as breaking out with possession where San Jose could and continued to go up the ice with it and just basically eventually just pick things apart.
I wouldn't say Carlisle was outcoached. I would say maybe game three he was because all the antics, the penalties with the Ducks were just horrendous.
You couldn't put him under control.
Yeah, and that's been very typical of the Carlisle regime and very typical of the Murray regime, really. As long as Murray's been there, the Ducks have been this rough and tough team that likes to bully people and physically get involved in the game. But, you know, lately they've been forgetting to win the game.
Yeah,
they've been looking for those hits.
And I think that kind of goes back to when we won the Cup because we led the league in fighting majors and won the Cup. We were the first team to do that since the Broad Street Bullies, Philadelphia back
under
in the
Brian
day.
Under Brian Burke.
Yeah, so that's kind of how the mantra was set up and how we kind of self-identified as that big team, big guys, you know, hitters. But once again, with the salary cap era, it's a little bit different now. It's there's going to be a lot more younger players in there, and they're going to have a lot of speed and hopefully a little bit of skill. So that's kind of the byproduct of doing a salary cap. So the Ducks haven't quite caught on yet. They got some pieces in there, but they really have to do a lot better. And it's not. We'll see if even Carlisle can do anything. But yeah, it's not that he was out coached. It's just the team's not set up to compete against a team like San Jose.
Well, we'll go a little more in depth into the show about the Ducks. Let's move on to the Predators and the Avs. The Preds crushed the Avs' hopes of extending it to seven. They get him in six in convincing fashion. I think it was a 5-0 victory for the Predators over the Avalanche. Pekka not looking good in the series until that game. Apparently, he decided to come out and play when Hammond was in net for the Avs, unfortunately. McKinnon couldn't save the day. This is the team we thought was going to win. I mean, Peter Laviolette and the defensive core there for the Predators, and they can just roll four lines over and over and over again. It was eventually going to kill the Avalanche, and it did.
Yeah, exactly. So we had kind of gone over on the last podcast Pekarine's numbers as far as save percentage, and they were below, I think, 885 in save percentage, and I think north of four goals against. Bernier hadn't been all that much better, so it was an all-offensive show. Kind of came to a head when Rene got pulled in for Saros. But since then, he came back. I mean, if it was not for the Hamburglar coming in and stealing away game five, 2-1, That should have been over probably in about five games. But they go back to Nashville, some home cooking, and win that game 5-0 in a shutout fashion. So Rene kind of refound his game a little bit, and unfortunately the injuries just kind of added up on the goaltending side for Colorado. But good run. Six games against it.
Yeah, they extended Jared Bednar, too, so he gets the extension there as a coach.
And I think he qualified as Coach of the Year. He's in the running for that as well.
Yeah, with I always want to say Butch Cassidy, but I know it's not him.
Oh no, it's Sundance. Yeah, no, and Gallant in Vegas. Obviously.
Who should win?
I'm thinking he's going to win.
The Jets cruise by the Wild in five games. Yeah, heavy hockey and scoring will kill you, and it did. There's not much the Wild could have done. This team wasn't built for many seasons for success. They were built to be middling is what we felt like, and that's the exact reason why, as we'll talk in a few minutes about Chuck Fletcher getting let go of his GM or contract not renewed.
Yeah.
That was the end of the playoffs for them. I didn't think they were going to do well against this Jets team. They're just too good. Yeah. And even if they faltered a little bit, Hellebuck's money. And I don't think he really had to work all that hard in this series. I think the Jets have just really put on a clinic against the Wild.
There's that. Then just horrible timing with Suter going down.
That doesn't help.
Once he went down, it was already just, well, let's see if we can get a win or two out of this thing. And then, add into that, just before their last game of the season, Zach Parise is injured again with a sternum injury. And that's just too much to overcome for that team and what Winnipeg's able to do. Winnipeg finally kind of, at least in my eyes, has lived up, reached that expectation of, hey, they got to the second round. They won a playoff game, let alone a series. It's unfortunate for Minnesota, but like you said, they don't have a whole lot of prospecting pool coming up. But at the same time, they don't really have any game breakers that are consistently in the lineup. Parise would be one, but he's just not there consistently enough. So you can't blame Dubnyk. He had a great series. But when Hellebuck got pulled in the third period, he came back and had two shutouts. So,
yeah, like I was saying, though, I felt like he didn't have these close games.
Yeah.
It wasn't like you felt the Wild were going to win out and get a couple here and force a seven. It was like, okay, they got one, and that was about all they were going to give them.
Yeah.
Tampa ruins Taylor Hall's heart year in five games.
Saw that one coming.
Just like McKinnon went one game longer, but the two underrated or under-talked about players across the league this year for the Hart Trophy both get bounced in the first round, along, I guess, if you want to put up there with Anze Kopitar for the Kings. Yeah. So just interesting the way this has all gone down. Because I felt the Devils might have had a little bit left in them to go six.
Really?
Maybe. Nah. But no, they get ruined in five. Tampa's too good. And they just, it's like the Jets. Yeah. What are you going to do?
Yeah, they're rolling. Tampa Bay is rolling four lines. Nashville's living and dying by one player, and that's Hall. And he had two goals. Palmieri ended up finishing the series also with two goals. Other than that, everyone else only had one. The good news out of that is at least Schneider came back in, played very admirable once Kincaid was a little shaky out of the get-go. So that's at least a little bit better for them moving forward. Hopefully they move forward, take that next step in the next season. But it was the writing was on the wall probably before the beginning of the season. If they pulled maybe a different team that wasn't the top team in the Eastern Conference.
That's the problem. That's the problem.
Yeah, right there. And the scary part, too, is Hedman had 0 points that whole series. He didn't get a single
point.
Yeah, he didn't have to. Everyone else was doing it. So the Kucherov, I think, with 10 points. Killorn had four goals. I mean, that's scoring from anywhere, from the top down to the third, fourth line.
The Caps, basically, I wrote, squeak out the series win over the
Blue Jackets.
Yeah. I really felt like that series was really, really close. I mean, obviously, games went to overtime. I think all but one went to overtime, and that was the deciding factor in game six. Good run for the Jets, or the Jets. The Blue Jackets, rather, and John Tortorella. Tortorella claimed they'd be back in game seven. Didn't happen. Barry Trotz gets his very much favored matchup against the Pittsburgh Penguins that I'm sure he's just so much looking forward to, along with all of Washington.
Uh-huh.
Looking forward to that round two. But the Caps eventually take care of the Blue Jackets here, and I'm glad to see Ovi moving on. As much as I like Panarin and the young squad over in Columbus, I feel like this has got to be Ovi's year, maybe?
Let's hope so. I mean, everyone's kind of just waiting for that to happen. Yeah, this one, what was good about this one is Bobrovsky looked good. I mean, it wasn't like last year when they got bounced really, really hard and he looked horrible against Pittsburgh in the first round. So, I mean, this one, at least.
He wasn't amazing.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, he didn't steal the series or anything like that. But, I mean, he played very, very well. It wasn't a lot of the easy goals that seemed to go in against Pittsburgh. So, I was happy with the way Bobrovsky played. A lot of close games, so you can take it either way where it could have gone one way or the other. Who would have known that 1-4 double 18 deflections that end up going in overtime and game three ends up being the catalyst. But the other big thing is that Holt Beast came in and was exactly that.
Settled all the kids down.
Absolutely. And went, you know, he came in game two in relief, lost in overtime. That was the only loss he had, but then he won, rattled off four straight wins. So good goaltending, a renewed spirit, I guess you could say.
Confidence.
I mean, to win four straight and kind of go out when you were down, you know, 0-2 in heartbreaking fashion as far as overtime losses go.
And then moving on to the last series to talk about is the Pittsburgh Penguins, still dangerous offensively, ended up getting by the Philadelphia Flyers in kind of a sketchy series because it kind of went both ways until the end. And Pittsburgh just decided to take the dump truck and crush them in game six. Full beers thrown on the ice. And Crosby said, "What a waste."
Yeah.
What a waste of waste alcohol.
In true Philly fashion, they douse the winners with cheap beer.
With full cheap beer. Full probably cheap $12 beers. Worth of Bud Light.
Oh, man.
And Bud Light's awful, but $12, you better drink it.
Oh, yeah, my gosh. I mean, that's
that's a 12-pack over around here.
Ciroc at that point. That series, like you said, was a little back and forth. It was the momentums were heavy swingers, and Couturier was kind of that pendulum that helped swing one way or the other. And even he, as injured as he was, Gudas, going into that last game, put up 5 points, a hat trick, and still wasn't the highest scorer in the game, wasn't even the highest goal scorer in the game, and obviously could not win that. Their goaltending, I felt, failed them pretty hard in this one between Elliott and Neuberg trying to do whatever they could. Fundamentally, they were just against a much more skilled team. About the only thing that's going to kind of hurt Pittsburgh kind of coming out of this is that Malkin's injured and Hagelin is injured. So we'll kind of see in the previews coming up what that's going to mean for Washington. But Pittsburgh did Pittsburgh things when they needed to do Pittsburgh things.
Yeah, they were one of the highest scoring offenses in the NHL in the regular season, and they didn't disappoint in the postseason. Crosby, 13 or 14? I think he had 13 points in six games.
But him insane. And Gensel did that too. So they have two 13-point goal scorers in six games. Helped out a lot by, what, they score eight goals
in the last game. You got to say Gensel like Doc Emmerich. Gensel? Can you do it?
Oh, how does he?
Gensel.
Oh, he gets all happy?
He gets like, he just extends all a bunch of names. He gets all excited.
Gensel. I don't know. No, but I mean, that's going to help when you shellack the team 7-0 in game one and then 8-5 in game two. There's a lot of offense there that Philly just wasn't going to be able to handle.
I mean, really not stellar goaltending for either team in that series. Honestly, Matt Murray wasn't amazing.
He had two games where he wasn't all that good, but Pittsburgh wasn't all that good in game two. So I can't throw him under the bus. Pittsburgh was good in game six, but Matt Murray has something he'd like to take back.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but Couturier had Couturier.
Couturier.
No. All right, now you got me all Gensel. MCL Gensel.
Tear.
Gensel.
Gensel.
Okay. He kind of had something to do with how well Murray wasn't doing.
Yeah, so unfortunate for them. Before we get to round two, we got to talk about a couple of shufflings of office people upstairs who make all the money.
All the smart people.
In the office. I mean, obviously the only
reason they win is because of these office people.
Or the reason why they lose.
Yeah.
As we'll get to here, Chuck Fletcher out as GM. Chuck Fletcher's tenure as general manager of the Minnesota Wild is over. His contract will not be renewed. They're immediately looking, geez, I'm being tongue-tied here, for a GM replacement. Minnesota made the playoffs in each of the last six seasons, but lost in the first round of each of the last three and failed to advance past the second round under Fletcher's watch. He's the one who signed for Zach Parise and then defenseman Ryan Suter to 13-year deals, $98 million in contracts on good old 4th of July, 2012. He also drafted good players, Mikael Granlund, Jason Zucker, Jonas Brodin, and Matt Dumba. He also acquired Dubnyk, so he's got some good pieces.
Some bad.
But as you said also in the recap for the first round, there's no game breakers on this team. And the Wild really don't have... I mean, the article for The Athletic from Mike Russo said it perfectly. It was, you don't bottom out. You're good enough just to make the playoffs. So then you don't get enough pieces in your system to make a contender from within. And you don't have any game breakers that you've traded for or acquired. So you're a middling team every year. You don't have an amazing defenseman. I mean, Suter is really good, but he's not popping in a ton of points. He's not, I mean, to me, he's not like a Drew Doughty or an Eric Karlsson or a PK Subban. He's more like that second tier. He eats minutes, but I don't think he's up there even with like with Hedman. And then on the forward ranks, Parise is always hurt, and I don't ever see him. I think he's like a second tier guy as well.
They did sign Stahl, and he turned into a 40 goal scorer.
Thanks, Boudreaux.
Yeah. But yeah, it's you can't have this many seasons of being that kind of the middle of the road team. At some point, it's, you know, shit or get off the pot time. And that's kind of where they're finally the owner was just, I'm done. It's not you, it's you. He pretty much just was, we've got to do something here with what we've got, because the GM is in charge of all the drafting, all the trades, all the signings. And for as long, he's only the second GM in Wild history. So,
right.
I mean, the fact that he's been there as long as he has, and there's still nothing really to show for it. They've never been to the Stanley Cup Finals. At some point, you just got to go new direction. Let's do something else. This isn't working anymore.
So yeah, going through his tenure there from 2009 2010, missed the playoffs. Next season, missed the playoffs. Next season, missed the playoffs. Then in 2012, 2013, first round lost Chicago. Next year, first round lost Chicago. Or sorry, second round lost Chicago. And then 2014, 2015, second round lost to Chicago. And then the last 3 years, losses to Dallas, St. Louis, and Winnipeg, all in the first round. So
I think the best they did is they ended up meeting the Ducks in the conference finals. And
oh, my God, that way back when.
Yeah. And
when, the Ducks won the Cup.
Yeah. So I think they lost that one in five games, if I'm not mistaken. So. Yeah, so it's been a long time since they've had a deep run into the playoffs, a la Capitals. So, you know, but Capitals have pieces in place, and Minnesota Wild really doesn't. They have an aging – their top players are mostly aging guys, and not Asian, aging – I can enunciate. Aging guys that are more than likely the way the NHL's moving aren't going to be much of a factor, you know, in years to come.
So what'd you think about the Flames picking up Bill Peters from the Hurricanes? He opts out of his contract from the Canes, gets signed by the Flames, out with Glenn Gullison, as we talked about last week. Very similar stats when you're talking about possession and high danger chances. Looking back at the goals for, they didn't have a ton of goals for. They were up in possession, but, I mean, Bill Peters has got some work to do in Calgary. But this team, I feel like, is just maybe ready for a new voice to kind of spark them. I'm not really sure about how to think about this, because he's, as we listened to Puck Soup, they said that perfectly, which was the most coveted coach that hasn't done anything, right?
Yeah.
Along those lines.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say something like that is the most coveted, unsuccessful coach in the NHL.
Everyone loves him.
Yeah, everyone loves him, but he hasn't really done much. So he had a losing record, although very close to 500, I believe.
Yeah, one game off.
Yeah, of his 4 years with Carolina. Carolina was expected to take that next step this year. Never really happened. They tried to do a whole lot of pieces that I thought might actually push them into that spot. But his whole tenure, they've never done better than sixth in their division. So if that's the case, then yeah, you've had 4 years to do something, and it's not there. Now it's going to Calgary, who's was a little bit of a surprise 2 years ago, kind of came back down to earth this year, but they have a wealth of young talent and speed that should be able to try and start pushing for division spots within the Pacific Division. The one thing that, you know, he was quote saying is that we'll play a game that's puck possession. It's deactive. Meaning defensive active. Also, that faceoffs are important. That's your first 50-50 battle. I want to have the puck, possess the puck, and I want to make sure that we value the puck. So he's saying the right things. We'll see how that kind of works. You know, they're a speed, young team, and that takes a little bit of time, but hopefully that voice is a little bit different. Jury's still out, still new. I want to see exactly what he does in this first, you know, season or so with Calgary. But Calgary's, you know, they're kind of entering that time where they can start to become a contender. Last year wasn't so good, but this year, I mean, they've got some of the pieces there. They need, I think, a little bit more solid goaltending Mike Smith's not going to be there forever. He was great when he was healthy, but if he gets injured, there's nothing behind it. And that's kind of been their problem ever since they didn't have Kiprusoff, is the goaltending hasn't been there. So they need that goaltending to follow up with a new voice as far as coaching goes.
And Bill Peters has always been a noted Corsi guy. He's always had the highest, like, I mean, the Hurricanes were always in the top for possession rates. And that's a stat that kind of nowadays is looked at as that's a good indicator, but better indicators on what your team does in the offensive zone when it comes to high danger chances, meaning that from circle to circle down to the crease, and then finishing ability. So he's got talent on this team that maybe can take advantage of all those high danger chances that he's going to be able to generate. And I think that it's a little better suited offensively Calgary is talent-wise than Carolina. I think he's going to have more success in Calgary than Carolina is what I'm looking at here.
Yeah, I'd assume so. I just don't know how much more Calgary is going to improve when you've got a Vegas and you've got a the Ducks are still semi-relevant. Hopefully they get better. Kings can still be in there. San Jose is in there. So Edmonton. So now you're kind of fighting a lot of teams to try and get in there. So we'll see if that kind of goes up. They did battle some injuries to some key players this season. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
It'll be good to watch coming up in October when they get their season underway. Let's get to our round two previews. Let's start with Winnipeg and the Predators, which takes place tomorrow is the only game on the docket for Friday. Mm-hmm. But who do you have between the Jets and the Preds?
This one is, you know me, first thing I end up trying to look at is, well, will goaltending steal games? And both of these goalies are a finalist for the Vezina in Hellebuck and Pekka-Rinne. In my opinion, Rinne just had better numbers, will probably win that. What was surprising was the way Rinne played against an inferior team in Colorado. He did not impress me all that much. That game five, his team kind of helped crush Colorado on their third string goalie, you know, finally caught it up to him, that sort of deal. But he hasn't looked all that stellar. It hasn't been that same form. The thing I've liked about Pekka-Rinne in the past, or what I've noticed about Pekka-Rinne in the past, is he's very streaky and he can be very good and very, you know, bad. And it depends which Pekka-Rinne you get. He's been far more consistent over the last, you know, fiscal year, from last year's playoffs all the way through the regular season leading into this playoff.
But in the playoffs last year, his numbers declined every round. Yeah. He was less effective every round, which you're getting better competition every round. True. But he didn't have to be as great in the conference finals as he was in the first round and comparatively to the second round last year. So this year, and he didn't get a great start in the first round.
Yeah, exactly. He let in quite a few soft ones, especially on the first shots. So Winnipeg is feeling good. They've won not only their first playoff game, they've also have won their first series. But at the same time, Winnipeg beat a really beat up Minnesota team. And even though Hellebuck did get two shutouts after being pulled, it is against an injured, less offensive Minnesota team, and he's going to have a whole lot more chances going against them that he may not be ready for. It was interesting to see what Hellebuck would do in his first chance into the playoffs and see how he performed. This will be his first real test against a real offense. That being said, Nashville possesses the top four in defense, defensemen. They were one of the top offensive teams. I just feel that experience between them two is going to go Nashville's way. I'd have to say, if you look at the top or the playoff experience amongst all the players, Winnipeg has 360 playoff games in their entire team. Nashville has 1,139. So they've got almost three times the experience per man going into that. So I think that playoff experience maybe gives them a little bit more of a push on a Winnipeg team that's in uncharted territories for the franchise moving forward. So I push this just slightly in Nashville's favor for 7.
I have the Jets taking this series also in 7. I think it's going to be very close.
You think they're going to win Game 7 in Nashville?
I do. Ooh. I think they're going to be dominant. I really feel
so many sad catfish
faces. I wanted to make it in 6, but I feel like the Preds aren't going away, and it's going to be a Game 7. And why not? I mean, this is the round that everyone's been waiting for. I mean, round one was kind of a dud.
Yeah, for sure.
Sweeps, just easily teams getting crushed. I mean, the Bruins and Leafs game yesterday was outstanding.
I mean, the West, the longest game in the series in the West was Nashville against Colorado, and that was six games.
And it wasn't
games.
That exciting.
Yeah, it wasn't all that great. And, you know, the only thing is Nashville is the highest scoring defensive core in the NHL. They also have the highest percentage of offense from their blue line. So that's something Nashville's going to have to pay attention to. They're going to have to be extremely good defensively, getting those defensemen who come in and kind of make plays happen. Sometimes they come in and they dice their way through an offense. They don't necessarily get a shot or get a goal, but it just pushes everyone back. And if you start pushing that team back, you could probably start to overwhelm that team. So we'll see what happens.
I feel like it's a seven-game series. I feel that if the Avalanche can take two from the Preds, I mean, I think the Jets are at least going to take three, and then I give them the money in seven. I feel like they're just more well-rounded. You got Scheifele, you got Nikolai Ehlers, you got Patrick Laine. Game breakers on this team. You talk about MacKinnon with the Avalanche, you're talking about three offensive major threats from the Jets, and then you look at the blue line. Dustin Byfuglien's a beast. He has no problem running people over.
Yes.
We'll see how Tyler Myers is doing. I think he was injured in the last game or in the last series. I think he's fine, though, so I think he should be getting a start in tomorrow.
And Perreault is supposed to come back from his game one injury in the Minnesota series.
That guy's always injured. Yes. And then looking at goaltending, I mean, the Hamburglar took over in game five and game six.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about Connor Hellebuck, who's had, like you said, a Vezina winning season or attempted Vezina winning season, right? He's a candidate for it. Much, much closer series. I can't wait for that series tomorrow. Let's go on to the Sharks and the Knights. So you have the Preds in seven. I have the Jets in seven, just to clarify. Sharks and Knights. Let me go first on this one.
Oh, okay.
I feel like the Knights, everyone's going to think I hate the Sharks, which I do, just because a Ducks fan, obviously. But, I mean, they're a good team to watch. They're fast. They have likable players on that team. Martin Jones was just incredible when he had to be in Anaheim.
Yeah.
Kind of the same notion for the Knights. The Knights didn't have to be perfect against the Kings because the Kings couldn't score.
Yeah.
So Fleury had to make a few great saves, but obviously he went 4-0, and he finished with an incredible save percentage against the Kings team. But they're both facing a different animal in round two. The Ducks couldn't score. The Kings couldn't score. Now you look at the Sharks who can score and the Knights who can score. It's going to be a really close series, but I feel that I'm not betting against Vegas. I got the Knights
tired
of
losing.
I just can't. I can't put the Sharks ahead in this series.
Yeah.
I got Vegas in six. I feel like they're going to be able to win it out for whatever reason, whatever variable. I wish I could deeper analyze this.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to because I'm writing an article about them.
I thought you would have.
But, I mean, for me, it's you're looking up and down this lineup, and there's no reason the Sharks shouldn't beat them. They got a Norris Trophy winning defenseman on the back end with Brent Burns.
Yeah.
They're probably going to get Joe Thornton back at some point in the series, who's a monster. He's a great passer, one of the best left in the game. You got Joe Pavelski, you got Logan Couture. Timo Meier is able to score goals, you know, at random times that helped them out against the Ducks. Sorensen's also another one of those guys.
Donskoy.
LeBanc, Donskoy.
Yeah.
And then you look at their goaltending. Martin Jones isn't a slouch, and he's a great goalie. And then you look over at the Knights, and you got Fleury and Annette, and on the back end, you're like, I'm scratching your head. Shea Theodore, okay. Derek Englund, okay. No reason they should be able to compete with the Sharks' defense. You look at Fords. That's where I feel like it evens out. David Perron, one of the assist leaders in the NHL this year. He had over 50 assists. Jonathan Marchessault and
Riley.
Yeah. And then you're talking about Carlson
yeah.
obviously. So I think the fours kind of match up a little better.
And Tatar.
That was a whiff by George McPhee.
Yeah.
But I got the Knights in six.
It's funny you said they're going to get a different animal because both Vegas and the Sharks beat animal technical
teams.
The Kings, if you want to extrapolate that. But for me, that goaltending duel, once again, I'm a goalie, is going to be great. They both go in. Jones has a 97 even save percentage, and it's only bested by Fleury's 97.7 save percentage going in. There's just a one goal difference in what they did in the series, each with a 4-0 record going in. Two different styles. Fleury is more like the Jonathan Quick, where he's very reactionary, very good goaltending ability. He's very decent in his technical aspect, where Jones is one of the best technical goalies. And there's not a lot of movement in his game. It's just a lot of, I'm in position, it's stopped, If I have to be desperate, I will, but I don't rely on that. I rely on the technical side of things. It generally translates well over a career for a goalie, but what can you say that you can't say about Marc-Andre Fleury? I mean, Flowers got 3 Stanley Cups and is leading the way so far in this playoffs. So it's tough for me to pick a winner as far as the goaltending side goes. It just depends which one will work out better. But like you, I am just tired of being wrong picking against Vegas at this point. Vegas can roll all their lines, and it's almost like it's the exact same line hitting you. So they are going to, in my opinion, probably push more of the offensive pace than what Anaheim was able to do against San Jose. So I think San Jose, although good, can outlet, has good pieces, they're not nearly as quick as Vegas is. And Vegas showed against a team like LA that should be able to kind of stop some of that and play their own game, that they can push their own game as well as they want. They're riding high, and I have the Vegas Knights winning this one in 6.
Oh, we're even on that
one.
That's good. It's good. No parity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. That's what people want. No one wants conflict. Everyone
Let's talk about the Pens and Caps. I have the Caps in 6. Mm. I feel like the Pittsburgh defense and goaltending is not up to par against what the Caps are going to throw at them. Ovi, I know it's a broken record. He's on a mission.
Yeah.
He needs to win a Stanley Cup, at least get to the conference final. That's where he's going to be able to show what he's made of against the top-tier teams. And most likely, I mean, we'll find out who that team is based on our picks when we get out of this one. Crosby's been otherworldly as always.
Yep.
Jake Guentzel has also been otherworldly in the first in the first round, but against the Flyers.
Yeah.
Against a team that had trouble defensively night and night again, and goaltending was atrocious for the Flyers. You're not going to get that from Holpe,
nope.
And there's much better defensive players, and the Caps can score with guys like Kuzi, Backstrom, Ovi. And then, obviously, Oshie is another player that's a dangerous threat there on the power play. And just to throw that in there, I have the Caps in 6, like I said, and the Caps scored 17 seconds into this game against Pittsburgh tonight right now.
Oh, really?
Kuzi scored the goal.
You say Caps in 7, by the way.
I said Caps in 6. I had 6.
Oh, okay.
I had Caps in 6 over the Pens.
Wow, winning it in Pittsburgh, huh?
Yeah, just going to piss all over that Pittsburgh parade that they're expecting to be in the Caps' heads. You know, we're in the Caps' heads. They're not going to get past us. And, you know, I was part of that parade, too. But, I mean, looking at this Caps team, and now that they've finally got faith some for some reason over Grubauer, they have it back in Holpe, I think that's going to speak to the Caps' confidence, and they're going to be able to come out with a victory in 6 games.
Yeah, one of the stats kind of looked at, this will be the 3rd straight time that they've met in the 2nd round of the playoffs. Pittsburgh has won the previous two 2 years ago in 2006 in the not really technically, but the rookie year of Matt Murray. They won in 6. Last year, Murray was injured, and Fleury actually pulled out a shutout in Game 7. They won in 7. So they've played over the last 2 years 13 games. 8 of them have been decided by 1 goal, 3 of them by 2 goals. That means 11 out of the 13 games have been by 2 or less goals to determine the winner in that. That is a close 2 series meeting up for a 3rd matchup now. The difference I feel this year that I think might be critical is the depth at center that Pittsburgh has. They had Bonino and Cullen doing the 3rd and 4th line behind a Crosby and a Malkin. This year, they don't have Bonino or Cullen. They did get Brassard to be that 3rd line guy, but now Malkin, injured, is not there. And they didn't mess up the 3rd line. They went ahead and took the 4th line center and put him up to 2nd, which he did very well in Game 5. But that center depth is gone, and that was a concern for me once I saw both of those centers leave, speed guys, versatile guys. So it's not the same Pittsburgh team that beat them in all those close games, and now it's a Washington team that's pretty much the same, but a little bit more desperate, a little bit more ready, and then Matt Murray has not been superly impressive, where he was kind of in the head in 2016 to go ahead and win that series against Washington. So for those simple reasons, the offense is very close. If Malkin and Hagelin do not come back from their injuries in a very, very quick fashion, I can see Washington really taking advantage early and holding on. I do have Washington winning this series, but I think it'll take a full 7 games because these teams are so evenly matched. Defense, offense, and goaltending. It's just the little intangibles that might become the bigger player in the game.
Yeah, and Washington is 8-2 in game ones versus Pittsburgh. Just throwing that out there. So they're leading right now, but doesn't mean they're 8-2 in game one, but they haven't won a series.
Yeah.
So it's a long way to go. Game one, I know they're winning, but still, we have a lot to look forward to.
And you got
to
think about also with Matt Murray, his playoff record, you know, some of the stats. He's 10-1 after a loss. He usually has really great numbers, didn't in game six against the Flyers, but still 10-1, and he hasn't even lost a playoff series.
So it's going to be interesting. Uh-huh. You have him in seven. I have them in six. So moving on to Boston and Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is going to be a quicker series than most think. Yeah, the Bergeron line was great against a defensively inept team in the Leafs.
Certain games, I'd agree.
And I had picked the Leafs to win that series. They didn't. Freddie Anderson and company did not come up big enough in game seven, even though they took a lead into the third period, blew that lead. And lost in horrific fashion last night in Game 7.
And how?
Terrible.
Yes.
They move on. Obviously, the Bruins due to play the Tampa Bay Lightning. I have the Bolts in five. I feel like the Bolts are a much quicker team all around. They have the better goaltending. They have better defense. You can say what you want about Chara. Whatever. I don't have faith in him long term. I don't have faith in this Bruins team long term.
You didn't
playoffs.
Even think they'd get out of the first round.
Right.
So this is bonus time
for you. Yeah, they're on overtime on my clock. Yeah. Time to let them go. I feel like Tampa's just too well-rounded. I feel like their speed and they're able to score from everywhere. And I think Boston relies so heavily on that top line that if Tampa could find a way to shut them down with defensemen like Hedman and McDonough now on that team, I don't have a problem with them. Strawman, too. And Sergachev. I think that they're going to be able to defeat the Bruins in five. This is the least interesting matchup for me
You think it's most lopsided.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel it will go a little bit longer than five games. Boston, you're right in all the points, and I would say that I completely agree with you. And then, once again, I'm going to look at a goalie side of things. Vasilevskiy looked just fine. Just barely over, essentially a two goals against average. Rask was under 90 save percentage against that team in Toronto. Toronto, although speedy and good, Tampa Bay is going to have even more weapons. Point has been an amazing, exciting addition along with Tyler Johnson, who's a perennial playoff performer. Add in Stamkos in that. Kucherov's got 10 points. Killorn at least had four goals. I mean, it's just there's lines and points and goals to be scored everywhere.
It's not just Austin Matthews.
Yeah, it's not shutting that one down, which they did a good job on. He only scored one goal in that series. But this is a veteran team that's, as of recent times, been almost all the way to the conference finals, Stanley Cup finals in the last 5 years. So, I mean, they are good. They are more experienced, and you will not get the same mistakes that you would with Toronto. The other thing that Boston's going to have to realize is they're going to probably be a little bit tired going in seven games, where Tampa Bay had only five games to get their dispatch New Jersey. I think Tampa Bay wins this in six. They've got too many weapons. Hedman hasn't even scored a goal or a point yet. Wait till he starts heating up. The defense is good. The offense is better. And the goaltending is better.
8.99 save percentage for Rask.
Insane.
And Vasilevskiy with a 9.41. Much different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, say what you want about the New Jersey Devils.
Yeah.
They're not the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs aren't far from being a dangerous team. They took the Bruins to the brink.
Yeah.
But I think Boston's going to have their hands full. I just don't see them getting out of the second round.
They live and die by that first line. Games 5 and 6 that they lost after having a 3-1 lead, that top line of Bergeron, Pasta, and Marchand, 0 points.
Yeah.
0 points in two games. They lost. And, you know, Freddie Anderson had something to say about that in one of the games. But then game seven came alive. They each had a goal in that game, and now they're in the second round. So Tampa Bay's job right now is to control that top line, and you'll probably control what Boston does. And I think they're more than capable of doing it.
Screw Boston. Yeah. So there's our picks. I have Jets in seven.
So violent.
You have Preds in seven.
Uh-huh.
I have Knights in six. You have Knights in six. I have Caps in six. You have Caps in seven. I have Bolts in five. Yeah, Bolts in six. So the only one we differentiate on is the Winnipeg versus Predators.
Yep.
Otherwise, we have winners down the board. Let's move on to the Ducks news. We got about 20 minutes left of the show, so everyone who's not a Ducks fan will tune out now.
Bye.
Let's start from the most recent news. The Ducks don't renew Trent Yanni as assistant coach. He was in charge of the defense, in charge of the penalty kill, leaving us with Randy Carlyle and Steve Kanawalchuk, former NHL player. Capitals great.
Yeah.
And
he's got pretty blue eyes.
They need to bring in somebody else to handle the defense.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I said this on the show several months ago, that there was a feud between Carlisle and Trigiani based on, you know, strategic deployment of defense. They disagreed, I guess, on how things were going. There was a divide, and they got rid of him. Obviously, right. Carlisle and Bob Murray are buddies. Otherwise, he wouldn't have brought him back for a second time. You know, you date your ex-girlfriend, and what, are you going to get rid of her again and say it was a mistake? You gotta ride the contract out.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, until it slaps you in the face really, really freaking hard.
Very interesting that they got rid of Trigiani, because the penalty kill wasn't bad. They have a good young defensive core. Randy Carlisle's team can't score goals offensively, and that's not something Trigiani was in charge of.
No, but... yeah, I feel their bigger problem wasn't necessarily defense or anything. The defense did, you know, what it could. They had to sacrifice some of their depth on defense in the season to address the injuries on offense. So Vatanen goes, and you bring in Henrique, which worked out absolutely great, I think, probably for both teams, but definitely for the Ducks, getting Henrique. As far as the defense, I feel the deployment of certain aging defensemen probably didn't really help the Ducks in very many ways. They've got a still, I mean, they have a young defensive core, and it's nice to have some of that experience there. But at the same time, if you can't compete, you can't compete. So the leadership or your past experience, you know, is great. Awesome. Become a coach. Tell people how to do things, or how you think they should do it, or study the game and do that. But once you're past your ability to help a team, step to the side. And the coaching staff seemed to be a little bit slow on the upkick on that one. You can blame Trigiani, and I wouldn't either. But at the same time, he is in charge of making it a great defense, and that defense was not good in the playoffs. It was horrible. But that's a team defense.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I don't think it's a Trigiani issue. I feel like it's a coaching a strategy overall issue from Randy Carlisle. I don't have a lot of faith in the guy, honestly. And then Bob Murray is the next guy you got to talk about. Mm-hmm. Because Bob Murray's made comments here. Let's just talk about the speed game that you had mentioned earlier in the show. This is moving to a speed. The NHL, that's where they're going, you know?
Yeah.
Murray says... on the Sharks speed, Logan Couture and Joe Pavelski are really fast skaters. Are they? No. They're good hockey players, but if your team plays fast, you can make players fast or faster. And that's the first thing that has to be addressed around here. Then he gets questioned about Corey Perry. He's got to buy into playing fast. We have a few more than him that have to buy into playing fast. I don't know if that's the correct answer. I feel like you can say whatever strategy you want, but if you're guys aren't fast, you can't just all of a sudden make them fast. I mean, what are you going to be making stretch passes? Because the puck travels faster than players.
Yep.
I don't see how Corey Perry's also going to find, you know, Hot Wheels coming into next season and be able to tear it up on the rink like Connor McDavid or even like a Taylor Hall or up in the upper echelon of speed
players.
That
is upper echelon. I don't think he's expecting.
But he's not going to be that guy. And the rest of this team is pretty bulky and slow. The Ducks play a really heavy corner dump and chase hockey. And they also didn't like the D-to-D passing, he said. He didn't like the D-to-D possession game, which, for me, that's all about possession. If you're being attacked and you pass the puck to the defenseman to cause the defense to change and come over, going against the grain from the attack, then you are able to outlet a pass. What does he want him to do? Not go D-to-D and then just force a pass up the wall? I'm trying to figure out what the hell Randy Carlisle and Bob Murray are talking about while changing strategy here, because it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, well, I think with the D-to-D, I think it's kind of not that you're all the way back in your own end doing D-to-D passes. It's like where you're kind of, you've got the puck and you've got the, you know, I'll pass it here, pass it there, and then slowly make an outlet pass. I think they want a quicker game, not necessarily a speed game, but just quickness. And quickness can be developed. You know, for Corey Perry, it's if he wants to buy into that. His game has been, I'm going to be a big guy around the net, agitator, look for the loose garbage. And sometimes you just got to be a little bit quicker, just that half a step quicker, get that edge, then use your damn long reach, which he has plenty of, to kind of work his way around. If you want to slow it down once you get around the net, fine. But to get to the zone and in the zone, you might have to have that little bit of jump and that explosiveness, the quickness, not necessarily the speed. So hopefully that's probably what he means versus, oh yeah, this guy's got to go Nathan MacKinnon speed. I don't think that's ever going to happen. I mean, no one should be expecting that.
But so then how do you change that if you're Bob Murray and you're going to all of a sudden you bring on a guy who likes heavy hockey like Randy Carlyle, and then you give him a team about heavy hockey, and then you're like, this isn't working anymore. We're kind of locked in contract-wise. We can't really trade anybody. Mm-hmm. Make this team faster, please. Okay, and Randy's not that guy. And they get rid of a defensive coordinator rather than, or defensive coach or assistant coach rather than the head coach.
And I think what they're saying is they don't want the because once they get the, if the defensemen have the puck and they're passing back and forth to each other, waiting for something to happen, the forwards start meddling. They kind of just, they're around, they're kind of moving, but there's no cut through. And I think what they want to do is kind of what helped them when Carlyle first came in, and that was one pass out of the zone. And what that does is it creates transition, and that means speed. And not necessarily that your guys are all of a sudden 100 times faster. It's that the other team isn't necessarily sure where you're going to go. When you start passing back and forth and your defensemen are looking for that perfect play, and then the forwards are like, well, is he passing now? Or should I start moving? It should be one pass. Everyone is moving already, and then you make a pass maybe into an area where they can get to it. Not a dump and change, dump and chase, but one where you can get it to an area where they can catch up to it quick, and they're already moving versus standing still or not moving, not really striding towards the play or the puck. That's what I think he's trying to do, is let's get the puck out of our zone, up the boards, quickly catch teams maybe sleeping, and it looks a whole lot faster than if you try and wait for everything to open up slowly, organically.
Yeah, but I think that D to D passing is important at the same time. If you have an attack on one side, you don't want to force a pass. You got to get the puck to their side.
Not every situation is going to call for that quick one out, but if you were looking, or that's your mentality, one pass, get it out. If it's not there and they're completely covered, or the forwards are tired, or the other team's playing a trap and there's just not a whole lot of room, you cycle it back, work it out, and then maybe have a play where there's some misdirection, something where the defense has to open up or something like that. I mean, I don't know. They're going to have to work on that. But I think that's what it is. They just want to have it one in, out, get people moving. Don't get that complacent pass back and forth, and then the forwards have to kind of slow up, see what they're going to do, and then wait for it.
So Mike Coppinger, who is a Ducks writer for LA Times, he writes here that the plan doesn't necessarily involve acquiring quicker players, which is what I just said, right? Yeah. Murray pointed to the attacking style of the Sharks that he said he would like to see the Ducks skate in a similar fashion. And like we just went over, less passing between defensemen and the blue line overall, playing beneath the faceoff dots. That's not what he wants. He wants it out. Mm-hmm. So looking at this team that the Ducks have right here, I don't really see it being much better than what we got this year. Mm-hmm. Kevin Bieksa, his exit interview said he's disappointed. Yeah. Not a good-looking move by not playing him. So he's definitely not coming back. Boschman, we saw hang up the skates after 13 seasons. We applaud him.
Absolutely.
He was great in his prime for Anaheim. He was never a 1-2 guy. He's always a middling defenseman, 3-4.
But he beat
Big hits.
In that one
fight. Murray's final quote: in today's hockey, you can't just play 4 or 5 defensemen and 9 forwards. He believes the fourth line should play between 10 and 15 minutes routinely. They played 5 to 7 this year. That's a Randy Carlyle issue. How is that anybody else's fault than his own? Playing a guy 10 to 15 minutes like the rest of the league does, compared to Carlyle playing his fourth line 5 minutes. I mean, you bring in Chris Kelly, Jason Chimera, or Captain Canada and Mr. Speed, and then JT Brown, who I thought was underutilized and was a good player.
Absolutely.
Playing 5 minutes a night. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's obviously not Randy Carlyle's fault. I don't get it why Randy Carlyle's leash is so long, other than you look at the injuries from this last season, you give him the pass.
Yeah, that's maybe it. The fact that he came in first season, we went to the conference finals, we beat our Game 7 Demons in Edmonton the series before. This one is a little bit, sucky in the fact that Eves is gone pretty much the whole season. Getzlaf missed significant time. Kessler, significant time, and is,
wasn't himself.
Wounded warrior the whole season. So we applaud him for doing what he could, but he's just not the guy he was. So Carlyle did a very good job behind a very good goaltender in Gibson. I'd say tandem goalie in Gibson and Miller to get them into the playoffs and even a high division spot. What I don't like with blaming Carlyle on his deployment of the players is, how is Chimera or Kelly going to make that fourth line all that much better? They weren't all that much better.
Right.
So grabbing them right, at the trade deadline, or signing them, It's that doesn't make your fourth line great all of a sudden. They do need a better fourth line. They do have to roll four lines. But from Carlisle's perspective, he's seen what they were showing, and he's like, I can't put those guys out there for more than 5, 6, 7 minutes. You know, hopefully they do well. But at this point, you know, I feel he probably had more faith in Chris Wagner in anything than those two guys. So, I mean, it sucks. Yeah, JT Brown, in my opinion, should have definitely had a little bit more. He had some speed, some hit, some enthusiasm. So at least he should have been in there. But yeah, they got to kind of round out those forwards. And, you know, hopefully I see this team getting better just because I see them getting healthier. You know, Getzlaf hopefully healthy. Eaves will be a big addition. Perry, I guess at this point, you're not. I hope he can get over 20 goals.
Okay. Let's get to that comment.
All right.
There was a comment by Elliot Friedman, who is basically number one when you're looking at sports writers covering the NHL. His opinion is taken very seriously. He
Him
puts
and
out
Dan
a,
Rosen, yeah.
puts out a weekly 31 thoughts, one for each team about. There's not always. I don't think there's one for every team. Sometimes he has like a few for each. But relevant thoughts. He's got number 25 from this week was. He starts, Murray, as in Bob Murray, is hopeful a summer of rest will help Ryan Getzlaf and Ryan Kesler. He feels they have to ease the captain's workload overall as a team. I mean, obviously.
Depth,
they've relied on him way too much. He would not discuss Corey Perry with Elliot Friedman, but it's clear there's tension. This will be a huge summer and the 2019 season for one of the franchise cornerstones in Perry. He's got to come up big. Looking at also the rest of this says one player he did not correct his opinion of was John Gibson. In the past, I've mentioned that the Ducks love their goalie, but worry about his propensity for injuries. GM Bob Murray says that's no longer the case. That was when he had hip flexor or groin issues, but he hasn't had those in 2 years. These were different. And in some cases he was held up for precautionary reasons. We're not worried about him anymore. That's good news. Mm-hmm. But now everything's swirling around Corey Perry.
Yeah.
He's got 4 years left on an incredible deal.
Three.
Is it three now?
Yeah.
So he's got three years left on this deal, making almost
$8.6 million. Yep.
The full no move.
Yep.
He has to agree to move.
Yep.
Bob Murray wants him to play faster. That's not Corey Perry's game. He's not going to be faster. His knees are busted. And what do you really get at this point for Corey Perry at the twilight of his career, putting up 40 points, 40, 50 points max? And away from Ryan Getzlaf, how many points is he going to put up? Because let's be real here. Ryan Getzlaf is basically the straw that stirs the drink for Anaheim's offense. There's nothing you can say more about that. I mean, Raquel had a great year and he's awesome, but I mean, Ryan Getzlaf had a dark horse Hart trophy season if he wasn't injured for so many games.
Yeah, I mean, he was an assist per game guy once he came back from his injury. And if he can be an assist per night guy, and Corey Perry is still at, I think it was 17 goals this year, he was 19 last year. And especially in the beginning where, you know, that offense, you know, he needed to be that guy who was going to score goals because there was no Eaves. There was no Kesler. There was no Getzlaf. Perry had that chance. So he got to play against Raquel. And he still finished with a career low 17 goals. I don't know if you go all the way back to the beginning of his career, he might have lower. But he's progressed low. He hasn't hit 20 goals in the last 2 years. So either he's going to have to change what he's going to do to be successful in the NHL and on this Ducks team, because once everyone comes back healthy, I'm more interested to see what Eaves, Raquel, and Getzlaf are going to do. Perry, I don't see him going on the second line as a shutdown guy, so he's going third, fourth line. So either he's going to stay down there and hopefully produce something, or he can change his game up and make himself change the dynamic that he has to make him a threat in a different way versus just being in front of the net, having some offensive skill and a good touch with the puck. You can't just keep, you know, lifting pucks to the top of the net when you're standing in front of the crease in warmups and expect to be, ungodly good player. Where do I see Perry moving from here? Probably third or fourth line.
Take Richie's spot, bump Richie to the fourth line, let Perry play with Henrik and Kasha.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, if you want to say, well, let's just get rid of him, easier said than done. Like you said, no movement contract. You can't put him in the minors, so he can't go through waivers. You can't, if you want to buy him out, he's making 8.6 for three more years. If you buy him out, you have to pay him about $5.7 million over 6 years, and that counts against the cap. So you can't really move him there. The only thing is you hope you can trade him, but anyone who sees what he's produced will want you to hold a lot of salary against it. So, I mean, you're still probably looking at half of his salary being retained just to move him on. So now you're paying a player like Maroon, or you're paying a player to not play for your team. And
right.
that's a little bit rough, unless there's a real reason to bump up a lot of our younger prospects, the Sam Steele, the Troy Terry, then it might make more sense to eat some of that contract and move him. But
what are you going to get at this point? You can't get what you want
not
and
much.
What you don't want.
Not much.
You don't want Corey Perry. You don't want $9 million in your pocket. You're going to have to eat some of it, first of all. Second of all, you're going to get picks.
Yeah. About the only way they can maybe get out of this in a good way is that if there's a team that is so under cap space, like Arizona was a few years ago when they took on the Datsyuk contract and the Pronger contract, you just trade that contract, essentially, and they now possess it just so they can meet the floor of the...
Rumor has it, though, out there that there is interest in Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaf. More so Getzlaf than Corey Perry if Anaheim is willing to relinquish those players. Obviously, a lot of work
involved. But that comes down to if the player
wants to move. Perry just had a baby. He's been married pretty recently, and people forget these guys are human beings and have family lives and family affects what you have going on the rink.
But they need to win for me now.
It's just like people don't get that. It's like that affects you. Ryan Getzlaf talked about having kids really affected
his
play.
He's got like four.
He's got four kids. Got a lot going on at home.
His wife's on a reality
TV show. You know, he's got to retain his baller status by bringing home the bacon every season. Perry, as much as I liked him in his prime, it's unfortunate he kind of hit a cliff. And everyone's going to look at his contract and judge him based on that. I've said that before. And it's unfair to him because he deserves every bit of that money. Yeah. It's what he earned. And it just he doesn't control how his body's going to deteriorate over his career. Obviously, he wishes he was scoring 30 goals a season still. But the Ducks are in a predicament. They've given too many players no move clauses. And that affected them in what I called the fantasy draft with Vegas with having to give up Shea Theodore because they got Kevin Bieksa on a no move clause when you haven't even put it on a Duck sweater. They offloaded Stoner. But, I mean, look at that defensive depth. Really hurt Anaheim in the long run here.
Yeah.
No Sammy, no Shea.
Yeah.
And then Cam goes
injured,
down, and it's over.
Yeah.
That third pair just got eaten alive in the playoffs and much of the rest of the regular season.
Yeah, so to kind of cap it up with Perry, I kind of hope he kind of finds a way to do what Dustin Brown did, and it was everyone same thing. Look at that contract. Look at what he's doing. The dude's washed up. We're screwed with this guy. And let's hope he retires, that sort of deal. But then he turns around, and he has a great season. Dustin Brown had an amazing season last season. So who knows? There's still that potential to happen. It's going to be tough for him if Eves comes back and is as strong as he was when he came in. It'll be tough for him to crack that top two line, and that makes it a little bit more difficult. But, I mean, if he's putting up 19 goals or 17 goals and he's on the third line, I mean, that's at least something. That's
so hard for fans to swallow, almost $9 million for a third-line guy.
I know, but then if you look at it, you got a third-line guy putting up 19 goals. And then you get Kasha on the other side.
Yeah, I know. It's frustrating. We'll get to more of what Anaheim's going to do after all the playoffs. We're looking at July for free agency, and the draft's another biggie where players move. We can talk more about Brandon Montour, Andre Kasha, and Nick Ritchie's RFA contracts that are coming up. But just to polish off this dust, my gosh, the Ducks aspect of this show. Ryan Kesler lost 20 pounds. He wants to get faster. He says he's going to come into next season fully healthy, fully recovered from that hip surgery. We had bone fragments removed. We had basically to learn how to skate and walk again.
Yeah.
He wants to retain it that he clocked in, according to Hockey Reference, at 202. And now he's looking at 180. That's a huge drop in weight. So no more bulky sexiness for all you ladies out there who like Ryan Kesler. He's going to be slimming down.
Yeah, ladies.
That's the way he's going to be coming in to camp. I love that. That's
he's
fire.
Got it.
That's
he's
got
to do it, yeah.
That's good for him, man. He's in his 30s, and he's like, hell with it. I need to win. I want to win. Whatever I got to do to stay competitive. I like that from him.
Yeah.
And then Cam Fowler had a grade 3 separation of his shoulder against the Avalanche the last week of the season. Missed the whole first round. Said he was hopeful to be for the second round, but I don't know if that even would have happened at that point. That's really pushing it.
If it went late. Both series went late.
And then Eves apparently had shoulder issues, and he had surgery, so he's out till mid-October. He's going to miss training camp.
But at least he's coming back.
He's coming back.
That's
we'll see where he's
part.
At, man. Yeah. This older team, the Ducks are, is they need to win, and they need to figure out a way to figure out the forward lines because they're – just not scary anymore beyond the Getzlaf line.
The other thing, too, is their power play was horrific.
Oh, so bad.
I mean, in the regular season, it was, you know, lower in the middle of the pack, I think 18th in the NHL.
Bottom third's not good, right? It's close to it.
Close to it. So that's not going to help. It didn't help him at all in the playoffs. And so it's just, it's rough not having that. Eaves, I think, helps that. Having that net front presence that is a screener that Perry used to kind of be and was still trying to do this year, but just not as successful. So we'll see. A year off is a whole lot of time, so we'll see how it all kind of pans out. The Ducks do need to get faster. That's the NHL now, and that's the NHL, like I said earlier, it's the salary cap era. You have your top-end guys that make the most. They tend to be older, a little bit slower, and you have to fill in with speed and skill at the bottom end. And the Ducks need to start doing that. That means bring up younger talent. Don't wait too long to kind of try and get them developed. Unfortunately, it's just the way the NHL is now. It's speed and skill, and you have to draft well.
Oh, there you have it, Bob Murray. Get to work. I didn't see you at Starbucks today because apparently you were in Ontario checking out prospects, so I missed you. But that's it for us.
Mm-hmm.
We hit the hour, the Golden Goose Hour, where Jason has to go home and I have to go get my kid. So we'll wrap up here. Thanks to Mike at thegruelingtruth.net. Check them out. That's where they host our show. And other hockey podcasts now. They have the Bruins podcast and another NHL show, the Fourth Line podcast. So check them out as well, please. And if you like other sports, that's also a place to grab articles, blogs, and honestly, other podcasts. They have tons there. GruelingTruth.net. Hit us up on social media, the Puck Guys podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We're much more lively on Twitter. So please, if you haven't followed us, go follow us there. And last but certainly not least, leave us an iTunes review. We haven't asked for those very often, but we're trying to get the awareness out here in the playoffs. It's a big time for hockey. Go to the Puck Guys on iTunes, hit subscribe, give us a 5-star and a shout out there in the reviews. We'll love you guys forever. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye, guys.